The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, while the news cycle can seem somewhat sleepy during the Christmas period, on many occasions remarkable events have taken place, from notable storms to Apollo missions to ceasefires. Simon Tierney has been exploring some of this social history and he's with me now. So let's begin with the weather, Simon, the source of many a Christmas conversation. I think listeners will probably remember the big freeze in 2010. But what exactly are the criteria for a white Christmas?
Yeah, so Pat, to get to the bottom of this, I spoke with a very helpful woman in Met Erin yesterday, and she told me that, officially speaking, a white Christmas only occurs when there is snow lying on the ground at a Met Erin station, like Dublin Airport or Cork Airport, at 9 a.m. specifically on Christmas morning. So our threshold for what a white Christmas is, it lies somewhere in the middle of the international system. So in the UK, for example, the Met Office only requires a single snowflake observed falling during the 24 hours of the 25th of December. That sounds like a rather weak set of criteria to me. In the States, the definition of a white Christmas requires at least an inch of snow on the ground. Now, since records began here in Ireland in 1961, Met Erin told me that there have been just 9 white Christmases recorded, with the most recent, of course, being in 2010. A staggering 27 centimetres of snow was recorded at Casement Aerodrome on Christmas Day of that year.
Christmas Day email from a Dublin hotel to family in Dusseldorf. This Aer Lingus passenger from New York had 3 flights cancelled due to the bad weather, but family in Germany are waiting for her arrival.
We just agreed, my family and I, that we're going to, you know, put off Christmas until we're there, and then we'll have Christmas whatever date it's going to be.
214 passengers overnighted again at the Carlton Dublin Airport Hotel, victims of the weather-related air travel chaos and the Christmas Day closure of the airport. Passengers were understandably keen to get the first flights out.
I've been waiting since the 21st.
And when do you expect to get home?
Tomorrow, hopefully.
Last night, temperatures again plummeted to below minus 10 in many areas, freezing water supplies in and to thousands of homes across the country and the northeast of Dublin City. On the roads, driving conditions remain dangerous, with a heavy freeze due again this evening, before the long-awaited thaw begins to sweep across the country from tomorrow.
Joe McGrailey there reporting on Christmas Day 14 years ago for RT Television. Now, perhaps one of the most unexpected things to happen at Christmas took place along the Western Front in December of 1914. Will you tell us about that extraordinary Christmas truce, Simon?
Yeah, it's a great story. So I was actually reading Robert Harris's new novel, Precipice, recently. It's a great read, and it's set at the very beginning of World War One. And what really struck me, Pat, about it is that so many people seem to think that the conflict would be won by December. Home by Christmas was the regular refrain. Now, while this, of course, was hubris, a moment of hope did occur on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day of that year, when some sections, not all, of the trench system kind of in the Flanders area, they experienced a brief and unofficial truce. Now, let's listen to how it unfolded. This is described here in the archive of the Imperial War Museum in London by Private Marmaduke Wilmington.
We were in the front line. We were about 300 yards from the Germans. And we had, I think, on Christmas Eve, we'd been singing carols and this, that and the other. And the Germans had been doing the same, and we'd been shouting to each other, sometimes rude remarks, more often just joking remarks. Anyway, eventually a German said, "Tomorrow you no shoot, we no shoot." And the morning came and we didn't shoot and they didn't shoot, and so then we began to pop our heads over the side and jumped down quickly in case they shot, but they didn't shoot. We saw a German standing up waving his arms and we didn't shoot, and so on. And so it gradually grew, and eventually several people were walking about and nobody was shooting. And after a time, some bold people walked out in front of the barbed wire entanglement, and finally an Englishman and a German met halfway across No Man's Land, and they shook hands and laughed and joked and waved to their companions to come out and join them, and we streaked out. It was really rather like a crowd at a football match, you know. People from both sides streaming out. That was when we met in No Man's Land, and we spent the day there, and we swapped cigarettes, and we gave them rum, and they gave us cognac.
And that was Private Marmaduke Wilmington describing the Christmas truce of 1914 to the Imperial War Museum in a recording from 1985. Well, now, Christmas 1968 brought television viewers an event which was literally out of this world. Simon, will you tell us about the famous Apollo 8 mission?
Yeah, well, you might recall, Pat, that JFK, when he took office and gave that famous speech about, by the end of this decade, we will land a man on the moon. Now, by 1968, time was running out on that schedule, so they decided to supercharge their efforts in advance of the Apollo 11 mission in 1969. And at the end of December, astronauts Jim Lovell, Frank Borman and William Anders, they became the first humans to fly to and indeed orbit the moon without landing, of course. And what made this event so memorable, I suppose, for people at home was the fact that the audio was broadcast to audiences all over the world. Now, in this clip, the astronauts are speaking live from the Book of Genesis, 380,000 kilometers from Earth.
And for all the people back on Earth, the crew of Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send to you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and divided the light from the darkness. And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you.
And that's audio from the 1968 Apollo 8 mission there. Now, astronaut Jim Lovell also delivered one of the most iconic Christmas lines of the 20th century on that day. What were those words?
Yeah, so at that time, Pat, when the Apollo spacecraft went around to the dark side of the moon, the part that wasn't facing the Earth, they went out of radio contact. So no one actually knew what was going on for a period of time. But when they came around for the ninth time out from that dark side of the moon, they came back into radio signal. Jim Lovell, who's still with us, he's about to celebrate his 96th Christmas, he made contact with ground control in Houston and he quipped, "Please be informed, there is a Santa Claus."
And living on the dark side of the moon. Now, the year after Apollo 8, new drink driving laws were introduced into Ireland in time for Christmas 1969. How did the damper affect the festivities?
Yeah, it was extraordinary doing this research, Pat, because the new laws introduced here in Ireland 55 years ago, they show just how far we've travelled in terms of drink driving legislation. The new laws, they enforced a 125 milligram blood alcohol limit and the use of breathalyzer tests for the first time by the guards. Now, to put this in context, the limit today is just 50 milligrams. Uh-huh. So that means you could legally drink 150% more alcohol than today before getting behind the wheel of your car in Christmas 1969. Now, the regulations at that time, they replaced previous Garda tests, which were a little more analog, to say the least, such as requiring motorists to walk the line.
You know, you often see it in American movies. Exactly. The cops still pull someone over and get them to walk in a straight line.
Yeah, walk in a straight line. Now, here's Eddie Barrett explaining the new rules on RTE television.
The Commission agreed that alcohol affects different people in different ways, but they felt that most people's driving would be critically impaired once they went over the 125 milligram limit. Two members of the Commission disagreed with the fixed level idea, by the way. And the commission felt it shouldn't be an absolute or defenceless offence to drive with more than 125 milligrams level. They should said you should still be allowed to show you were fit to drive. But the government decided otherwise. So once you're over the 125 limit, you've no real defence. Well, how are you going to know how many drinks put you over the limit? How many pints, or small ones, equals 125 milligrams? The short answer is, no one knows. The effect of alcohol on your blood depends on a number of factors. Your age, your sex, and particularly your weight. But as a very rough guide, according to Dr. Maurice Hickey, the state pathologist, it would take at least 2¾ pints, that's about 4 small whiskies, to put an 11-stone man over the limit. That's if he drank them quickly. And of course, a fat man could probably drink a lot more.
And he used the F word.
The F word.
O word, please. Obese.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was Eddie Barrett on RT in 1969. Now, some listeners are familiar with the annual Queen's Christmas Day message on the BBC, which of course is the King's message,
the King's
from
message,
here on in.
Yeah.
What have official broadcasts in Ireland?
Yeah, it was interesting for me, Pat. It was really De Valera who jumped on the political opportunities of radio in the 1930s. It was December the 24th of 1937 when he delivered a 5-minute broadcast, not on Irish radio, mm-hmm. but on American radio, CBS in the States. And I suppose he was trying to reach out to the Irish diaspora. And he memorably described them as the scattered children of Erin. I love that quotation. But perhaps one of the most intriguing moments in Irish broadcast history, for me at least, took place on New Year's Eve in 1961. This is a remarkable piece of television. This was the day that Telefiche Éireann, as it was known at that time, launched its service. And at 7 p.m. on that night, the first person to ever utter a word on Irish television was Eamon De Valera, now president, 79 years of age, no longer a youthful pioneer, eager to capitalise on emerging technology like he had been in the 1930s. Instead, Pat, I think you can really sense his trepidation, really, about what this new medium will mean for the people of Ireland.
I hope the service will provide for you all sources of recreation and pleasure, but also information, instruction, and knowledge. I must admit that sometimes when I think of television and radio and their immense power, I feel somewhat afraid. Like atomic energy, it can be used for incalculable good, but it can also do irreparable harm. Never before was there in the hands of man an instrument so powerful to influence the thoughts and actions of the multitude.
And that was President Eamon De Valera launching Telefiche Éireann on New Year's Eve in 1961. Simon Tierney, thank you very much
for
a most interesting contribution.